Well, good afternoon. Good to see everyone. I didn't mention this to Brad ahead of time, but this sermon will be, I hope, somewhat interactive. So I don't know if this will be able to pick up people when they talk loud. Oh, you already got one over there. Okay. So you're all kind of mic'd, at least from a distance. That's good. Thank you. I'm going to start in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 9. 1 Chronicles chapter 4 and verse 9. Read a few scriptures as the introduction. Now, this is in the middle of a long list of this person had these children and so forth. And in the middle of all this, in verse 9 of 1 Chronicles chapter 4, it says, Jabez was more honorable than his brothers, and his mother called his name Jabez because I have bore him with sorrow. His name meant, it sounded like the Hebrew word for pain. So it was a pun, I guess. And Jabez called on the God of Israel, saying, Oh, that you would bless me indeed and enlarge my coasts, and that your hand might be with me, that you would keep me from evil, that it may not grieve me. And God granted him that which he requested. He was asking God not to, you know, to help him not to be a pain, as his mom had named him something that sounded like pain. The point of reading this, I didn't want to get into Jabez. It's all it says about Jabez here. But the point is that he prayed and God answered. How did God answer him? Doesn't really say. It just says he heard him and gave him his request. In the 116th Psalm, first couple of verses I'll read. Psalm 116, verses 1 and 2. I love the Eternal because He has heard my voice and my supplications. Because He has inclined His ear to me, therefore will I call upon Him as long as I live. Inclined His ear. Now, God doesn't have a hearing problem like I have from working in construction all my life. And if you're talking to me and it's a crowd around, you'll notice I'll lean one way or the other. I don't really know if I have one ear better than the other, but I just tend to lean so one of them's facing you. And I can hear better that way, or I'll even go like this sometimes. God doesn't have the problem, but the image is there, that He really wants to hear what you have to say, and so He leans. One of the New Living Translations says he bends himself down to listen. Obviously, He doesn't need to do that to listen, but the point is, it's showing that God wants to hear you. God wants to hear me. So He inclines His ear. He leans over, makes sure He hears you well. In 1 John, near the end of the New Testament, 1 John chapter 5, read another scripture, verses 14 and 15, 1 John chapter 5, verses 14 and 15. And John writes, And this is the confidence that we have in Him, that if we ask anything according to His will, He hears us. Verse 15 says, And if we know that He hear us, whatsoever we ask, we know that we have the petitions that we desired of Him. So you get into the New Testament, and John's reminding Christians that God's hearing them. He's still inclining His ear, just like He did back in the time of David. He's still bending over to listen to Christians in this day and age. And we also know that Jesus promised to answer. I'll just read, you don't have to turn back here. John 14, we read this every Passover pretty much. John 14 and verse 12. Verses 12, 13, and 14 of John 14. Truly I say to you, he that believes on me, the works I do, shall he do. Also, and greater works than these shall he do, because I go to my Father. Verse 13. And whatsoever you ask in my name, that will I do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If you ask anything in my name, I will do it. So Jesus promises to answer as well. What I want to talk about today is not just that God answers prayer, we know that He does, but how does God answer prayer? How does He answer prayer? Does he dispatch an angel with the answer to whatever you ask? Does He just speak the word and it's done? Does answered prayer ever require your participation or my participation? Is it something we have to do? Or does it involve other people, perhaps? Well, let's answer these questions today as we explore the topic of answered prayer. If you want a title, you can call this Answered Prayer. Please think about your own life, because I do want to make this interactive. How has God answered your prayers in your life? Be prepared, if you'd like to share your experiences for the benefit of the congregation, for those that listen in on the internet. And during this whole process, the ultimate goal is for us to be encouraged by the fact that Scripture tells us, our own examples that we're going to share with each other tell us that God hears our prayers and He answers our prayers. Now, I've broken down the sermon into a few points of things that I thought of. I'll give you an opportunity when I've covered them. If you have some answered prayer that doesn't fit into any of those categories, that's fine. We'll take the time to create a new category. But you know how my brain works. I tend to like to put things in certain order in a category. So I've got several. And the first one, and the most obvious one, that God answers in a certain way, and He does this, He's done it throughout history, and that is that God answers with an immediate miracle. We like those kind of answers. We like it when God answers with an immediate miracle. Now, we're familiar, the Bible's full of examples. I'm going to spend a little bit of time in Exodus and also Acts, which is like the New Testament Exodus in a way. But in the book of Exodus, chapter 14, you're familiar with the story of the Red Sea. And that the Israelites were there, and they were surrounded by mountains on either side of them. Not quite surrounded. They had the mountains to either side. They had water in front of them, and they had an army behind them. They were stuck. And they needed an answer. And the answer that God gave at that particular time was something that was immediate, and it was a miracle. In Exodus chapter 14 and verse 10, we read that Pharaoh drew close, and the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. The children of Israel cried out to the Eternal. In verse 11, they said to Moses, because there weren't any graves in Egypt, you've taken us away to die in the wilderness. Why have you dealt this way to us and taken us out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it had been better to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness? So they're complaining. And you know the story. Moses says, you know, just stand still. Wait for God to act here. And they didn't have to wait long, because he said in verse 14, the Eternal will fight for you, and you will hold your peace. And the Eternal in verse 15 said to Moses, why are you crying unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward. Of course, forward was water. They couldn't go forward. But here was the miracle. Lift up your rod, stretch out your hand over the sea, and divide it. And the children of Israel will go on dry land through the midst of the sea. And then he was going to harden the hearts of the Egyptians and so forth. And Moses, in verse 21, stretched out his hand over the sea. The Eternal caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind that night made the sea dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites walked through. There was an immediate miracle. The Israelites needed a miracle. They got one. And God sometimes acts immediately because the need is immediate. And He acts in a way that only He can do. Moses was incapable of parting the waters or finding any other way out of that. You can't lead hundreds of thousands or millions of people up over top of the mountains. They couldn't turn around and beat the Egyptian war machine that was behind them. They couldn't swim across the Red Sea. They were stuck. There's nothing they could do. There's nothing the elders could do. Nothing the leaders could do. Nothing they could do collectively. If they all put their, bright ideas into a pile, it wasn't going to get them out of that particular situation. God needed to perform a miracle, and He did. And it's a wonderful thing. Now, I'm going to flip forward to the book of Acts, like I said. Acts chapter 28 is another incident that you're familiar with. And again, you don't need to turn there. The point is made, I'll read it, but Acts 28 and verses 1 to 6. This is when Paul and his shipmates were stranded, shipwrecked, on the island of Malta. And you remember what happened, that when they were shipwrecked, they were making a fire, right? And it says that Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks in verse 3 and laid them on the fire, and a viper came out of the heat and fastened on his hand. And he shook the viper bit him. And he should have been dead or very sick. And he shook the snake off into the fire, and he was fine. And they wanted to worship him as a god. So what's the point there? The point is, again, that God performed an immediate miracle. There's nothing that Paul could do, nothing that his companions could do. He was as good as dead, or at least very sick. But he didn't get sick. He was fine. Because God performed a miracle. It's something that only God could do. And it had to be immediate or he'd be gone. And there are times like that. I'm sure you've experienced. I hope you have. We'll share them in a minute. I remember a time when our daughter was very young. Too young to know really what was going on. She was just playing actually at church. And she apparently dislocated her shoulder. She came crying. She hurt. I don't know what they were doing, the kids. But she did something and she couldn't move her arm past about here. I don't remember if it was her right or left arm. She couldn't move it. And it's like, oh no, you know. So we took her to one of the elders and asked him to anoint her. And then somebody had looked at her. There was somebody there who had some medical experience. He said, I think she's dislocated her shoulder. This looks bad. And got her anointed. And within minutes, she was doing this. Didn't hurt. She's fine. She wants to run out and do it again, you know. Just immediate. An immediate healing. And it was a wonderful thing. And that was an example of God's mercy. It's not, in that case, it wasn't something that we needed an immediate answer. I mean, she could go to the doctor, get a sling, or get it put back in, or whatever. That could have happened. It didn't have to happen immediately, like something had to happen for the Israelites. But God sometimes acts immediately and performs miracles because he loves us. And that's an example. This year at the feast in Thailand, I was privileged to be involved in to anoint several people at different times. And one of them was early on, very early in the feast. One of the young men was there who was one of the first teachers they had at Legacy, and he was just visiting for the feast. And he had a bad toothache. He had some kind of a cracked tooth or something. I'm not sure exactly what it was. And he was in much, much pain. And anointed him on the first night, and the next morning he was a little better, and then it went away. And it wasn't something, I don't think, I mean, we got the dentist here, I should have asked him first, but it didn't seem to be something that was going to go away. This is something he needed to have it worked on, and he was going to get it worked on, but there was no place to get it worked on there. He didn't have the money. As it turned out, I think, you know, somebody gave him some money, and he was taken care of in one way or another, and he was going to get the work done when he got back to back home. But the end of the story was there that at least for the period of the feast, which is what I specifically asked for, that God would get him through the feast. And within the first day, the pain went away and he was fine the rest of the feast and got the work done later. So sometimes God, again, acts in only a way that he can do. We don't always even know. You know, there's a song by Amy Grant talks about you just don't know how many times God has protected you because you got caught up in some traffic and it delayed you for 5 minutes and a wreck happened that you would have been in, perhaps, you've been involved in if you'd have been 5 minutes further down the road. Things like that have happened in your life and in my life that we don't even know about. I wonder if you have examples that you're willing to share. I didn't bring my pen up. I'll listen to the tape. We'll find out. But any examples from your life or from those of your loved ones, people that you know, of immediate miracles where God acted and either corrected a problem, a situation, an answer to prayer, or perhaps protected you from a problem or protected someone you know. Anybody want to share any there? Okay, and go ahead and speak up. We'll try. Hopefully the mic will pick you up for the benefit of those that are listening on the Internet.
The car would buck and shake. So we got to, I think it was McDonald's, and the fellow who was in charge said, turn off the engine. Okay, so after we eat, we go out, naturally my car won't start. And he thought it might have been the starter, and I was like, you know, we're in Trenton. Who wants to be in Trenton at night? But anyway, there were several cars, so we sent them all home except mine. I think his kids stayed, and I don't know, maybe my kids might have stayed. I don't know if anybody remembers this. But I'm thinking, I sent up a short prayer. I said, okay, God, where's that angel when I really need him? And just then, some young guy comes walking over and said, you know, I had the same problem. And it was just, his battery terminals were bad. So he took it off, you know, took the battery terminals off, cleaned up the terminals on the battery, put it back on. The car started right up. So I said, I think I said, thank you, God, but I'm not even sure. But I should have if I didn't.
Anybody else? It kind of reminds me of one time I was working on a widow's car. Yeah, she had children in the church, and I forget what. She had a lot of nagging type problems. Couldn't even get in couldn't even get in her car from the outside because her locks didn't work. She had to reach in through a window, things like that. And I was fixing all this stuff on her car. It just took a day, and borrowed some space at somebody's auto shop, and went to the junkyard, got what I needed to get. And I was having trouble with certain things because I'm not a mechanic. And I was working, and I asked God for his tech angel. I assumed he has a tech angel or many of them. I said, I'm having a problem. I can't get the whatever, and you just relax a little bit, and then it works. And so, those are times, if you're doing something, in this case, it's doing something good for somebody, and I'm having trouble, and God can, intervene there and do it right then and there because he loves us. Anybody else? Anybody else have a story? Yes.
Back in 67, when I was a teenager, my dad was a truck driver, and he was in a very bad accident and had his one leg crushed. And they took him to the hospital, and of course, back then, you were only supposed to do certain things as far as medical intervention goes. And basically, the pastor came to the hospital and anointed him, but advised him, because the doctors his leg was crushed so badly that he had bones sticking through the skin, and I mean, the leg was totally crushed, and there were bones fragments sticking all different directions and out through the skin, and they wanted to do surgery and put pins in and bring all these fragments into alignment and everything. So, but the pastor advised him against that, to just have the leg set. Well, the doctors wouldn't hear anything about this because they couldn't set it in the state that it was in. And they had taken x-rays and everything. So he was anointed. So the next day they decided to take some more x-rays. And when they took the x-rays, everything was in alignment. All the bone fragments were all in alignment. So all they had to do was set the leg. Mm-hmm. So I'm not necessarily advocating that path, but the point is, I think God intervenes wherever we are in our understanding, and there was a definite miracle there because the doctors were just dumbfounded, that the x-rays from the day before, these ones were so totally different. Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what might appear to be the wisdom of it, God honors the faith and the trust in Him. Gary's story also reminded me, you talk about these angels, whether they're angels unaware, as we talk sometimes, or just people that God provides when you need one. One time, Tara, this involved Tara as well, she was in the car, and Shelby had to pick up her older brother from school and drop him off at school. And she had to go take a left-hand turn through this intersection. She did it every day, several times a day. And for whatever reason, Tara wasn't belted in, and it was very short. It's kind of like you're still getting things on as you're leaving. You're in a hurry, So she didn't have her seatbelt on, and somehow or another, the door was open, or she opened it, and she rolled out into a busy intersection. And a man, now I wasn't there, so I was just hearing the story from my wife. A man showed up out of nowhere, picked her up, and took her, got her off the road. And before Shelby could thank the guy, she couldn't find him. And, I have no idea. Shelby has no idea. But regardless of how it happened, the fact is it happened. Somebody got our daughter out of the road and out of danger. And so as far as Shelby's concerned, anyway, that's a miracle, however that happened. Anybody else before we move on? I got another one. Okay, sure. Good.
I have a number of them.
Good. That's fine. This is encouraging. The point of this is be encouraging. Share them all.
This is my personal experience. A lot of people here know about this. In 1990, I was in a car accident where I slid on ice and the car actually flipped on the roof. And then I ended up on the wheels, but the car had landed on its roof. And I was down in a field, and I didn't lose consciousness or anything because I immediately knew where I was and everything, but wasn't quite sure what had happened. But there was a fence all around this field, and there were some people stopped. They stopped along the road and were just kind of looking down there. But then all of a sudden there was this girl there down in the field, and she asked me where I hurt, and I said, well, I hurt across my neck and shoulder area. So she immediately put her hands around my neck, like in manual traction, and it turned out I had a broken neck. But to make a long story short, there were two men working on the roof of a house across the street, and we went back later and talked to them, and they said that they helped, because we couldn't figure out how she got down to the field because of the fence. But these men said they helped her over the fence. But they did not know what happened then. When she heard the ambulance coming, she left. And she was an EMT, by the way. She said she was an EMT. And she left me go and said, you'll be okay. The ambulance is coming. And then she wasn't there anymore. And we went back later and asked these two men, and they said that they had been baffled ever since the whole incident, how she got back out of that field, because they didn't see her anymore after that either. And an EMT is trained never to do that type of thing until someone is there to take over for them, but she did.
Yeah, shouldn't have left you. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's been, you know, something. And it turned out then when I was at the hospital after they did the CAT scan and everything, and the orthopedic surgeon came and he said, you don't know how lucky you are. You're not a quadriplegic right now, because it was that exact injury of when people dive into pools and everything. And he credited, you know, that manual traction with saving me from being a quadriplegic. So.
Wow. Another immediate intervention there. Anybody else? Okay, Arlene.
When I was about 22 years old, I was coming from Carlisle to Mount Holly, where I lived at the time with my son and my first husband. And it was dark, and I was going a little faster than I should have been because I overstayed my shopping trip and I was in a hurry to get home. And I turned onto this road where I knew there was a train track, but I never expected to be have a train be going at that time of night, nor did I expect that the side of the train wouldn't have some illumination. So I just come barreling down this road, and right in front of me was a train. I saw it, and I said, oh God, help. This is it. I'm dead. And I started recalling things from my life because it was that close. And after I said that prayer, short prayer, I looked to the left, and there was an opening in the fence. It was like a farmer's field all along the road. An opening right there. I pulled in, stopped, let the train cars go by. And after I calmed down and from my shaking, and the train had gone, I started, the car was still running, right beside it. I didn't even kill the engine. Still sat sitting there with my engine running. I drove wrong home in a state shock.
Didn't hit it.
That was one of the times. Another time I almost hit a deer. So, I mean, that was another close one. It could have come right in the windshield at me.
Sometimes God lets us, in Sue's case, you have the wreck and then help. Sometimes he prevents us from having it in the first place, which is nice. Yes, Pansy?
This was many years ago when after my first husband died, and I was just starting to go to the church worldwide, and I was coming home because I had gone from Littlestown to Chambersburg to pick up my nephew to Middletown back to Chambersburg, and then coming. And, of course, I love speed anyways. And I know I'm going too fast. And if you're familiar there, at Lake Heritage, you know, you sort of come up over a hill and then down. And, of course, I was coming up over this hill, and somebody was stopped there to turn in Lake Heritage. I actually felt that steering wheel turn and go around that car. I know it was my angel was turning that wheel, because it wasn't me.
Because, again, he performs miracles immediately, sometimes when we need them.
We're under God's protection. We really are.
Okay, I want to move on to another point. And again, when we get through the points that I came up with, if you have an example that doesn't fit into one of these points, please hang on to it. We'll share it at the end. Sometimes, these are actually a couple of these touched on it, where somebody came in to aid in a miraculous way. But sometimes, maybe less miraculously, God sends someone into your life to facilitate an answer. You have a prayer, you have a request, you have some kind of a need, and instead of a sudden miracle that just solves the problem right then and there, a person comes into your life, or people come into your life, and they, or that person, that one person, is the agent of God in giving you the answer that you need. I have a couple of scriptures. Again, these are examples that you're familiar with, so you don't need to feel like you need to turn there. In Acts chapter 10, we read about Cornelius, and the point of turning to Acts 10 is to read that Cornelius was praying. He was a devout man, and he was a God-fearer, and he prayed to God always. And then he saw this vision, and it was the angel coming to him and telling him that he needed to see Peter. And, of course, then Peter had a vision. Now, Cornelius had a need, and he prayed about his need. And God sent a person to him. And that person, of course, was Peter. And we read that later on. And in fact, what's interesting about this story is not only did God send a person to minister to Cornelius, but God also performed an immediate miracle later on after he was talking to them, after Peter was talking. And while Peter yet spoke these words in verse 44, it says the Holy Spirit fell on them which heard the word. So God performed a miracle as well as involving a person in the answer here. If you want to write down Exodus, back in Exodus again, chapter 4 and verses 10 to 16. You remember that Moses was called by God to be his representative in going to Pharaoh and saying, I want my people go out into the wilderness and worship. And Moses said, I can't talk, and God's, he's got all these excuses. And God says, I'm the one that made the mouth. I can make you talk fine. That's really not an issue. Oh, well, please, can you send somebody else? So finally God says, okay, your brother Aaron's on his way to come see you. He can be your spokesman. So Moses had a need at the time, a lack of confidence, whatever his issue was. And rather than, God could have forced the issue. He could have just made Moses an eloquent speaker, which actually he was. Great in words and deeds. That's what Stephen says about him in Acts 7. But anyway, at the time, he didn't feel that way. And God answered the prayer by bringing Aaron back into his life. He said, I know Aaron can talk, so we'll just, we'll let him speak for you. He can be the spokesman. So, I'll speak to you. You speak to Aaron. Tell him what to say. And that's the way it worked for a while. So God answered Moses' request by sending a person into his life, a person, that had been there before, of course, in his life, and having that person answer the prayer. Now, that happens a lot. It's happened a lot in my personal experience, and I'm sure it's happened in yours, and hopefully you can share one or two. But I can think back. I'll use my wife as an example. My wife is, Shelby has befriended, if you want to put it that way, some widows. And there's two of them that call her their daughter, good as a daughter. And those individuals, it's like one in particular that we've put the bathroom in for, Laura Martz. Now, she has a lot of needs at her age and in her situation. How's God provided for those needs? Well, she needed a bathroom. You all put the bathroom in. So that's people that came in. God did not snap his finger, speak the word, and all of a sudden there was a bathroom on her first floor. Didn't happen that way. It took people and money. And that's a way that God answers prayer, by involving other people. If it's companionship, again, people visit her, including my wife, and do things for her. She also has, interestingly enough, she has several granddaughters, four, I guess, but one of them that's taken a particular interest in her, and sees to her needs on occasion, and just recently, I just found this out this week, asked her some questions about her bedroom or mattress. You know, do you sleep upstairs? And, you know, oh, yeah, I sleep, whatever. I don't know what kind of answers Laura gave, but the bottom line was that this granddaughter went and bought new mattress, bedding, pillows, the whole works for her grandmother. And Laura didn't realize how bad her previous one was, I don't think, until she got in the new one. Then, oh, wow, so comfortable, asleep so well. So, again, she had needs. I don't know whether she was praying about those needs in particular, or if, you know, maybe she didn't realize that maybe her bedding was a problem. But the point is, God knew it. God knew her needs, and God sent somebody into her life, or somebody that was part of her family, to take care of those needs, even though she probably didn't even make a particular request for that. And God does that. I want to share with you a little bit. Some of you get this letter, so excuse me for repeating something you've already read. But for those of you that don't, this is the latest letter from Legacy Institute from Leon Sexton. And there's some things that have to do with us as a congregation in here, although he doesn't spell us out. And we're not the only congregation. But there are several letters here from pastors and church leaders, one in India, one in Burma, and where's the other one? In Kenya. And I just want to read a few comments here. These people have needs. And you as a congregation, or we as a congregation, have helped to see to some of these needs. Leon says, some of our brethren are poor and need our help in every year to provide a means for them to get together, fellowship with one another, and enjoy feasting on the Word of God. They should be able to have special meals during the feast, especially on the high days. Because of you, our fellow laborers, and your generosity, our poor brethren in remote areas were able to attend and glorify God with other brethren. Here are the reports from three sites that Legacy Institute helped sponsor. I have left each message unedited, so that I do not change the flavor of each pastor's words. I'm not going to read the entire messages, but I just want to read some excerpts. This is from Lazam Braun in Burma, in Kachinlan. An excerpt here. He says, a widow from Bamo is very, very faithful to God. She paid tithes. Before she came here, she keeps all the tithes in her hand, and she brought the tithes here. On October 18th morning, they departed from here to their homeland. It is needed 4 days' journey by motor car, train, and ship between Naman and Bamo. Before they left, I gave them 60,000 kats, which is about $50 U.S., for their traveling budget. I do hope they will share their faiths and beliefs to their friends when they arrive back home. So there's, you know, some of the money that this congregation and other congregations have provided went to help those in Burma that were keeping the feast. This one's from India, from Chidi Babu and their congregations. Dear sirs, I am so delighted to inform that I have received all of your generous gifts for the needs of Feast of Tabernacles 2007, thanking you so much for your intercessory prayers and lifting us up with your helping hands to be enjoying both physically and spiritually. Skipping down, we expected that there are two ladies being counseling for baptisms, but we praise God there is a man who accepted the truth, stood up and received baptism on the last great day of the feast, and added to the church. Please, continually pray for these newly saved people so that they will stand firm for the truth and grow in the love and obedience to the word of God until death. We served delicious food at the end of programs, and we were all very satisfied through physically and spiritually. We buy some Telugu Bibles and distributed those who needed. And we specifically help with that. Now, it doesn't, you know, I guess that's why he mentioned it. And this is the first confirmation, at least that I've heard, that they did do what we asked them to do with the money. And distributed to those who needed. All the recipients are sending their heartfelt thanks to those who provide the Bibles. And, excuse me, that's from Chidi Babu in India. And this last comment is from Julius, what's his last name? From Kenya. I don't have his last name. Greetings in the name of Jesus Christ. It's my pleasure to send this email to you after the Feast of Tabernacles 2007. On behalf of Church of God, Maasai Mission, board and members, I take this opportunity to send our heartfelt thanks and appreciation for sponsoring our year feast site. This year feast is unique and better than any time before, and this because your help. Unlike other year where we either meets only on first and last day of the feast. Before we got your help, we were preparing for the same regulation. After getting your love offering to be able to change the plan and booked reservation at nearest town for some church members and also communicate to every church pastor or leaders about the new plan. The $400 was of great help to buy food and accommodation, plus rent the hall for this additional money raised for this year's feast. I won't read the rest. It's interesting, but he's saying that some of the people actually walked back and forth, and they lived close enough, up to about 20 kilometers. And there was also a donation to help a water tank, and another donation from Legacy. I don't know which church areas it came from, for widows and orphans to be distributed. So these people have needs. Okay, lots of people have needs. These people in particular have needs, and those needs haven't been provided by, again, God snapping his fingers and saying, give you a feast site, and everybody's got plenty of food. But it happened because different people, mostly in the West, have taken an interest and provided the funds to make that possible. So sometimes God sends people into the lives of those who have needs. There's two examples. I wonder if anybody here would like to share any examples of a need that you had, a prayer that God didn't just solve immediately, didn't perform a miracle, but sent somebody into your life or some group or some people into your life that provided the answer. Anybody? Yes?
Also, again, as a widow. when my husband died, my sister, instead of sending flowers, she sent me a check and said, she thought I needed the money because my husband had, he was disabled for 5 years, and of course, I worked, so we had a very meager living. And so she sent me money. And I thought about this, and I know God put it on my heart to send it out to California, which I did. And a few weeks later, I got a letter from our bank. I had payments on my car. I had a mortgage payment, two little kids to take care of, and not a very good job. But anyway, I was scared to death to go in to the bank. And I went in, and I sat down with the president, and he said, and I choke up every time I think about this, the goodness of God. He said, we got some money back from your car. My husband had taken out insurance if something happened that the car was paid for. He said, we got some money back from the insurance company for interest. They sent back. It wonders me this day. And he said, the board voted to give you the money, which amounted to $900 back 40 years ago. $900 was nothing to sneeze at.
Mm-hmm.
And it really came in handy. So you can't outgive God. No matter what you do, you can't outgive him.
Thank you. Anybody else? Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to say that my husband's present job that he has and is well content with and very well paying job. If it would have been for a contact that I had ran into on my job while I was working one day, he wouldn't be where he is right now with that job. And it seemed like there was a lot of things leading to that incident that suddenly just fell into our conversation. And I didn't see this person for a long time, and she was the wife to a man that Ray had used to work with at one of their past jobs together until that job place folded and laid off. And they haven't seen each other for a long time. And I've known her through a few get-togetherings that we were invited to their house, too. And so I was working that day, and suddenly she comes by. And, oh, hi! And I was working in Kmart in the video DVD department. And just started talking casually, how you doing and things. And, oh, what's your husband doing now? And I told him what Ray was doing then, which was a much harder job and not a very well-paying job. We were falling further and further into the hole. And it was also before the feast, too. And we just did not know where we wanted to keep the feast yet. We knew where we wanted to go, but we really knew we couldn't afford it. And we kept putting off that issue and where we were going to go. We kept giving up our idea that we wanted to do, where we wanted to go and serve that year, which the people were asking us to go do. And it was like all these issues were a financial concern. And we were talking, and she suddenly said, "Oh," and she told me where her husband was working. And I said, "Well, Ray, really, we're really wishing we could find something else and get back into what he was presently doing, too." Here she said that he was doing the same occupation that they presently, in the past were doing together at another location. And then gave me the name and place because I said, "Ray, really, I said, he's fine with where he's at, but financially it's not working out at all." So she gave me the place and everything and said, go give him a call. Go look it up. I'm sure, you know, they're hiring right now. And nobody else in our whole entire county is hiring. It was hiring. It was getting worse and more slim. So just through that little conversation that day, it all fell into place. I felt like we all had to God, we were praying, what are we going to do here? We may even have to think about selling. And it worked out. And it was only a month before the feast, too. And just everything fell into place.
God puts people where they need to be at the right time.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll go ahead. Sure.
After I graduated from college, I came back home and worked for a while. But I kind of, you know, they say you can never go home. I kind of came home and just felt like I didn't fit anywhere anymore. So I got this idea that I wanted to move back to Texas. So I worked for a while, saved up some money, and I had enough money to live for about a month. I had enough money to pay my first rent and all, you know, I was going to be okay for a month. But I had no job when I moved down there. I had to look for one right away. And should have been panicking. But I guess I was young enough not to be panicking. And before I found a job, I moved down right over Christmas, which was kind of stupid because nobody was hiring. Everybody was ready for the holidays. Taking people quite a while to get back into the swing of things after the new year, too, because they had just done their books and they were starting the year. So I had a couple of interviews. Two of them I didn't think were going to be, you know, I thought I might get a job, but I didn't really want to work there. And there was one that I really wanted at a daycare center. And I had to get to the interview. Well, the house that I was renting had this driveway. There was a culvert running under it, and he had to line your tires up just right because there was just enough room for a car back out. And I misjudged it, and my car went, it fell, the front driver's side tire fell, and my car was literally, back tires were up in the air. I couldn't get out of the car because my door was stuck in the mud. I had a nice dress on for an interview, and I finally managed to climb out the other door and kind of jump down onto the road. But I'm sitting here, I don't know anybody. I knew my roommate who was 18, and that's a whole other story. Good for nothing, basically, but she wasn't even home, and I didn't know anybody. So I'm just sitting there thinking, what am I going to do? I have no one to call. I don't know what to do here. And this guy comes by driving up. We lived right kind of next to a highway. He just happens to stop by and he goes, and I told him what happened. And he goes, "Oh, I have chains right here in the back of my truck." And he ended up pulling me out. My car was fine. Everything still worked. But he just happened to be driving by at the right time. It was kind of an odd time of day when there wasn't a whole lot of traffic either. And so I ended up getting that job. And then it was at a daycare, inner city daycare center, and it was bad. It was really, really bad. It was my only paycheck, and I wasn't making enough. I didn't think I was going to be making enough money there to start with. So I got home. I did this for that week, for a period of a couple of days, and I'm thinking, I just really want to be out of this situation. And I got home at the end of that week. Still didn't know anybody, and I was just walking. I was just taking walks because I didn't know what else to do. And this guy came out of the house, which I ended up finding out that all my roommates had gone to school with, but I didn't know him at the time. And he said, "Hey, I saw your car stuck the other week," but he said, "I'm going to come up," and I didn't have any chains or anything. And he said, "Then I saw somebody came up." And then he said, "Would you happen to be looking for a job or anything?" And I said, "Yeah." And he gave me the name of his, I think it was his aunt or sister's, it might have been related to his sister through her marriage, and said, "Oh, I know she to do ribbon embroidery, to cut ribbons and package stuff, and I thought, I don't care, anything to get out of the center of the finger, I'll do anything. So I took that job, and then a couple months later, I ended up getting promoted in there, and it was a really, really, really good job, but it was like everything just kind of rolled, and I was praying about it, but I got the job that I thought I wanted, which was the inner city daycare, but God worked it out so that I ended up with something a lot better.
Yeah, that person even asked you. You didn't ask them. They asked you if you're looking for a job.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You know, God sends people. Okay. Thank you. Got a third point here, and this is what got me started on this track. I heard a sermon last week, and it was by Dale Schurter, and it was specifically about this point, and it was the springboard from which I put the rest of the sermon together. The third point, it struck me when I heard it. Something, yeah, I guess I always knew it, but it just, when I started thinking about it, it was a whole new avenue, a whole new approach to answered prayer. And that is, sometimes God provides you with the opportunity to receive the answer. Maybe I should add to that, but you have to participate. You have to participate in your own answer. God provides you with the opportunity to receive the answer. But you have to participate in it. I can go back and mention, if you want to write down Genesis chapter 32. And verses 3 to 21 maybe, and then chapter 33 verses 1 to 9. This is when Jacob is leaving Laban. And he knows he's going to interact with his brother. And he's afraid because he's ripped his brother off all of his life, and he knows his brother's going to have it in for him. And he breaks his whole clan up into different groups. He has two basic groups, plus he sends some of his servants ahead with all kinds of gifts, and he wants to placate his brother Esau. In the end, of course, you remember how the story is, that God, he prays to God, he wants protection. But God never said, at least I didn't see it, God didn't say, don't worry about a thing, I'll take care of it. God let him sweat. God let him offer much of his wealth to his brother who he'd stolen it from in the past. He had to go through that. He had to live through that. And in the end, Esau's fine. Oh, I got plenty, I don't need it. You know, it all did work out. But Jacob had to face his own greediness, his own conniving attitude and all of that. And God gave him the opportunity to be different than that and to be giving. And Jacob embraced that opportunity. And in embracing that opportunity, he received the answer to his prayer, which was favor with his brother. Another example could be, and there are plenty, but I'll mention the example of Nehemiah. Nehemiah, who wanted to check on his homeland. We just read about how Judah and Jerusalem in particular became devastated by the army of the Babylonians. Chaldeans is called there in Jeremiah. And 70 years later, they were able to go back and start rebuilding. But they got started and then it just kind of ran out of steam and so forth. And Nehemiah was very concerned about it. And if you read in Nehemiah chapter 1 and chapter 2, you find that he prayed about it, he prayed about the situation, and he found favor with the king, and he was able to go visit and kind of jumpstart the progress there in Jerusalem. But when you read the story, it goes into detail saying who took care of building the wall from this particular gate to this gate, and then from here to this house, and there to that gate, so forth. All God did was provide the opportunity and the favor of the king and some protection from some of the enemies around. But the people had to rebuild the wall and rebuild the city. God didn't rebuild it. He wanted it rebuilt. He had to send prophets to get them started every once in a while. But they had to do the work. The prayer was, we want to go back to our homeland. We want to rebuild. God had prophesied that before, as we just read about. But God didn't do it. God just provided the opportunity for the Jews to go back and do it. and eventually to have a temple there for his son to come. The principle is also there in the book of Matthew, in the model prayer, Matthew 6, verse 14, says to forgive others so that we'll be forgiven. You have a problem with, you want to be forgiven, in other words, you forgive others. And we learn to forgive, we learn that process through practicing it. We are involved in that. God, and this is what, one of the things that Dale Schroeder said, God gives us the opportunity to build character, to develop and grow in participating in the answers to our own prayers. God doesn't necessarily all the time do the kind of miracles that we've just talked about. Sometimes he just puts you in a situation or gives you an opportunity where you can make a choice to grow and find the answer to your prayer. Now, I've shared one example with you before. I had been in tremendous debt in my business and prayed kind of the prayer of Jabez, saying, God, I've treated my people well, but I'm doing pretty poorly here. And I'd like your help. Well, God did not just rain money down from heaven, and he didn't point me in the direction of the tree where money grew either. But he did give me, in my business, the opportunity to work on a couple of jobs that were turned out to be very profitable. One of them, we had to work very hard. I had to work very hard myself, personally. It was a lot of stress and pressure for a short period of time. But in the end, made a lot of money. Not enough to pay the entire debt, but it was enough to take a big chunk of it away. Also, at the same time, I had occasion, I think I may have shared this with you too, to talk to somebody that we did work for occasionally. And he just, I told him what I was struggling with, not all the debts and everything, but just in terms of running my business. And he made some comments about how he runs his and didn't understand why I ran mine the way I did. And it was just like a free college education right then and there. The things that he said from his experience, I thought about it. Thought, if he can do it, I can. And I put into practice some of the things he said, and that really saved me a lot of money over a period of a few years. Now, again, God did not solve my problem by giving me a check to go pay off the government or, that debt, the tax debt. But he did put me in a situation where I was able to learn about how I was running my business and learn about how to do it better from somebody that it was totally unsolicited. He just kind of offered it just like Tammy's saying. He's like, do you have a need here? He didn't say it that way, but he said, I don't know why you do it that way. I do this and this. And I had to go home and think, why do I do it that way? And God worked out my problem, but I had to participate in a big way. Some of you know now, I've had a desire to begin a ministry in a different sense, a different thing than just serving here in the congregation, a personal ministry. And I've run into a kind of a brick wall where, there's not enough time and there's all these demands. And I've learned one thing, and that is I have to learn a little bit more about leadership. And I started reading about that, actually. And it's interesting that just, a month or so ago, maybe a little bit longer ago than that, I was asked to be a director in a building association down in Frederick where we work. I didn't ask for that job. I didn't seek it at all. But I'm going to get some on-the-job training of how to lead that I didn't ask for. But God knew I needed it. I don't see the end of this yet, but I'm willing to say yes. I've prayed to God for help in learning how to lead, how to maximize my impact as an individual. And God says, okay, here's an opportunity to learn a little bit about it. And I said yes. I could have said no. So I think those are some personal examples that I have that I've had needs, and I pray about it, and God says, okay, you want the answer, then learn this, practice this, go to work here. There's an answer here, but you have to say yes, and you have to get out there, and you have to get involved in the answer. And God has answered a lot of my prayers that way. I've had to work through them. Anybody have any situations there in their own lives they'd like to share? Anything similar to that where the answer wasn't just handed to you? The answer wasn't somebody else coming in and helping you out. The answer was God opened a door or opened your mind to see that the answer was right in front of you. You just need to say yes. Just need to walk through the door. Just needed to exert some effort in this area or learn this particular learn this particular lesson, perhaps, or to grow in a certain area that was going to benefit you for eternity. And by growing in that area, you actually worked your way through the problem. Anybody have anything there want to share? Sure, Dan.
And I could see both when I would read the scriptures. I was just completely confused with things that I had thought I had proved, but I never really had anything to put it up against, so I hadn't really proved it. And I got to the point where I don't know if it was depression or what, but I quit praying, I quit reading the Bible. It was just like out of defense, like I can't read anymore, I can't keep being confused anymore. I still wanted to know what the truth was, but I had to back away from it. I couldn't deal with it. And I was like that for a while, for a period of time. And then I heard in one of my lectures, it was just this little simple phrase. The professor said, don't ask to understand certain things, ask for the truth. I thought, oh, yeah, that's pretty obvious. And then I was able to go back and study, and I had to do that work to study. But it was just a simple little phrase, you know, don't pray to understand the changes, pray for the truth. And I thought, you know what, that's the right thing. That's what I need to do, and that will clear up this confusion eventually. And it did after a while.
Okay, thank you. I'm writing that down because I think that's profound, and I hadn't thought of that either, that way. What's the point of trying to understand something that's not true? Seems simple, but until you actually, until you think about it that way, or somebody gets you to think about it. Anybody else? A growth opportunity where God answered a prayer by giving you a chance to grow in something? Yes, Sue.
Well, I just before we ended the congregation, forced all of us to do a certain amount of growing and studying certain issues, and about how the church should be organized. And I feel that I grew a lot and I learned a lot of things about church government and so forth by doing what we did.
Actually having to think about it rather than just accept what somebody says about it makes a big difference. Anybody else? Yes.
Everybody else in Nova believed different things, so it was just okay, It wasn't that big of a deal. But when I went to Seventh-day Adventist school, all these Seventh-day Adventist beliefs were being thrown at me, and some of them I didn't agree with. And I had to explain that to the kids or my teachers or whoever was throwing it at me, like, why I believed the way I did. So that really helped me to strengthen my faith. And knowing what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard to go through it, but it helped.
So rather than, God could just make everybody be nice to you and not throw it at you, but that wouldn't have had you grow any, would it? So. Okay. Sometimes it's got two more points that won't take too long that I thought of anyway. One of them is one of the ways God answers prayer is that he says to wait. We heard a sermon here. I wasn't here that particular week, but Hugh gave a sermon on waiting the Christian wait. Sometimes God's answer is wait. He hears, you can write down Psalm chapter 40, or the 40th Psalm and verse 1. He always hears, but he doesn't necessarily answer right away. Or his answer is, I'm not going to do what you want right now. We read there in Psalm 40, verse 1, I waited patiently for the eternal. So I had to wait. But it says, and he inclined unto me and heard my cry. So he's listening, but I had to wait. You know the stories. Abraham, for instance, had to wait for many years for Isaac. And God, he was promised, but he didn't get Isaac right away. The answer was, you have to wait. And he didn't even understand. And Ishmael became a lad of whatever age, before Isaac is born. I don't have time. I was going to read something from West's Word Studies, but I'll just very briefly. This is from five paths in the Greek New Testament. It's about Hebrews 11:1. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. And they call the, it's Moulton Milligan from the vocabulary of the Greek Testament, say that this word translated substance means the title deed. So they're saying faith is the substance of things hoped for. It could be translated faith is the title deed of things hoped for. And as Jim spoke to us in the one sermon there about hope, hope being hoping is not, you know, we like we say it today, it means you have this assurance of what is out there. And faith, that Catherine's talking about, faith, according to them, and this idea of the translation, is that faith is the title, it's the deed you already have to something you're sure you own. You just have to wait. The hope is, it has to do with the wait between now and when it's fulfilled, not whether it's sure or not. So that's what faith is, that we have the title deed. We have possession, in a sense, legally, but we don't have it yet. We haven't inherited it yet. Sometimes God says to wait. Sometimes you ask. I know I've asked, there's a scripture in Ezekiel that I didn't understand back in my 20s. I said, God, I don't understand what this means. It's a whole chapter about this, and I don't understand it. And I didn't get an answer. I asked a few people, you know, and I studied it, and I never got an answer until about 15 years later. And then, oh, you know, there it is. It was always there, but I got it. There are times that I've prayed, you know, when I got married. Shelby says, well, you don't have much empathy. You don't have a hard time understanding the feelings of others. I didn't know that. That's what she said. She has a lot of empathy, so she noticed in me that I didn't have that. And so I prayed about that. And what does God do? Well, you know what he does. First of all, you don't get it right away. He can't give you empathy. I don't think, maybe he can, but in my case, what he does, he puts you in situations where you're able to hurt or experience, you know, certain difficulties, and then you understand what other people are going through. And so it takes a while. You don't get the answer right away. It's a growth experience, as we talked about before. Anybody have anything they want to share there? I know it's getting late. I'm not going to twist your arm, but sometime when God says to wait, but then the answer comes later. No? Okay. I mean, that happens. We don't always get the answer right away. And kind of tied in with that is sometimes God says no. He doesn't just say wait, he says no. And you may think that God's giving you a quote-unquote negative answer. But you know, sometimes you get that no answer, and it's actually a good answer. You just don't understand why at the time. And later on, you realize, if I would have gotten that then, that wouldn't have been good. If God would have given me what I wanted, it would not have been a good thing for me. But we don't realize until later. You know, Paul, when he had this thorn in the flesh, it doesn't explain what that is, some kind of either a person that was hassling him or some kind of a handicap he had or whatever, some kind of a problem that was affecting him physically. He asked for God to remove this problem, and God said, no, my grace is sufficient. And Paul realized later when he was writing this that, you know, how that that enabled him not to, he didn't glory in his flesh because God left him with this particular thorn. And he realized the benefit in that. But while he was asking for the answer, he didn't realize the benefit. He wanted the answer. God's answer was no. Later on, Paul realized why no was a good answer and better for him than yes would have been. Sometimes it takes time. I know, I'll give you one example in my life. At two different times when I was young, when a particular college that you all know that was sponsored by the church I went to, I tried to go there. And for whatever reasons, two different times, it was not possible. And it wasn't until many years later, one of the people that was involved, at least one of the times, in saying no, I happened to meet him face to face, and he said, you know, you're probably better off, better off by not having been there. And he told me a few reasons why. And now, you know, the older I realize, there's a whole lot of reasons why, you know, not that it wouldn't have been in some ways good, but knowing the way I am and knowing the way certain things would have been, it probably would have been a problem for me and a problem for those around me. So even though I wanted to do something and I thought that was something that would be godly and that God would want, God said no, and it took me years to figure out that that was actually the best answer. Anybody have anything you want to share there before we close? Where you got a no and it was actually a good answer, you didn't realize till later? Yeah.
Well, it's not exactly a no answer, so maybe it doesn't fit. But it was along the lines of,
That's right.
You said, because I was accepted to that college, and then Jim came into my life, and I ended up not going. And looking back, you know, I thought, often thought that that was a good thing that happened, that I didn't go there.
That was part of my deal, too. The second time I wanted to go, I wanted to go for a year, and they said, I applied for a year, that's what they wanted. And then while my application was sitting on somebody's desk, they changed it to where they wanted people to come out for a whole 4 years. I said, I never applied for 4 years, I don't want to come. They wanted me to come. By that time, I had a woman in my life, too, and I said, no, I'm not coming out for 4 years. I never wanted to do that in the first place. I'd already been to college anyway. Yes?
Yeah, this was about 5 years ago. When my mother was not very good health, or it might have been more than 5 years, but anyway, at first what I had planned on doing was selling our house and building a piece onto her house, like, you know, mother-in-law or mother's apartment. Well, when I was cleaning out the basement, I found snake. No way was I going to move in a house where I found snake. So then we were going to build on a plot of ground, beautiful plot of ground that my mother was going to give us. And the township said, no, not big enough. So, okay, she had 10 acres. So, okay, I'll take 4 acres. Well, we kept going around in circles and around in circles, and by that time, my mother was to the point, got sick. I put her, she took her to the doctor, and I said, well, can I take her to the emergency room? Well, she's in the hospital for a couple of days. I said, if I wouldn't have gotten her to the emergency room when I did, she would have died. But anyways, then they sent her to a nursing home, and of course, my mother wasn't happy in that nursing home. She said she's going to walk home. they were going to put her in assisted living. I said, no, you're not. I'm taking her home with me. And I brought her home with me. Well, that didn't work out because I couldn't take care of her. So then we found a nursing home that she was, content to go into, so that I sold her house. But had we built that house, it would have been a disaster. So I thank God every time I think about it for having him tell us no, no, no.
Sometimes we can't see all the ramifications, so a no answer is a good answer. Anybody else before we close? Yes, Jim.
Just a quick story from something that happened in our family. We're talking about prayer, and occasionally emergency things will happen in our lives where prayer, there's no time for the prayer. And God still answers what we would have prayed anyway. And this is a story about my grandparents who were not church-going people. And sometimes I think that people, even though they haven't been called yet, are being worked with by God for the future. They were in New England traveling, just my grandfather and grandmother, and they get into a situation where they're on a road that they didn't know. It was dark and it was foggy. And my grandfather said he was just driving along at a snail's pace trying to figure out if he was still on the road or what. And he said at one point in time, he thought he heard a noise. And so he said, to hear it better, and they had the radio on in their car. So to hear it, he rolled down his window. And as he did, he said a freight train went by. He could have reached up and touched it.
Wow.
And he said here, when it was all said and done, he had gotten turned on a railroad intersection, was parallel to the track and was that close. And he said the train went by, and he and my grandmother just sat there in silence. And when it went by, he said they looked at each other, and it dawned on them that the song on the radio was the Lord's Prayer. So that was just a little story, maybe a little lesson for him for in the future. I don't know.
Anybody else now, before I close, you had a story that didn't fit into any of those categories that you want to share? I'll just give you a brief one. I just thought of it when he was talking about being on the road. I had a wreck a little over a year ago where in my truck that I drove today, a big Ford truck, I plowed into the back end of a little car, a little Camry, on a road where everybody's supposed to be moving, but he was going slower. Somehow I lost my train of, my concentration or something, and hit him from behind. I didn't hit him that hard. I didn't think, but my airbags went off, and I pulled off, but it sent him, just the momentum difference. My truck weighed so much more than his car. It sent him off into the median strip, and, of course, I'm praying all the time that he won't, he'll be all right. And he got turned around and started heading into the other lane, coming the other direction, and that could have killed him very easily. He didn't. He just protruded out into the other lane a little bit. That's not what I wanted to tell you about. I just wanted to explain that there was a wreck. And then after that, I thought, this place is dangerous. There ought to be some kind of a fence, rail, or something to keep, because it's a place where people are, there's all the time slow down here due to the nature of an intersection that's up ahead. It's a road, it's 15, it's a road where everybody's going 50, 60 miles an hour, but a lot of times there's slowdowns at this particular area. And I said, this is dangerous. And I prayed, I can't prove that this is why it happened, I prayed that they would put a rail there to keep somebody else from getting killed. Maybe not the guy I hit, but somebody else is going to, sooner or later, going to get killed because of that. And I just noticed this last week that they put guardrails up there. And it's been a while, but I don't know. I don't know if they're looking at statistics or they just look at it and decide. But that's something I prayed about. They prayed that the government would have the wisdom to put a guardrail where I almost killed somebody, and they did. So, whether or not that God was involved in that or not, I give him the credit because I prayed about it and it happened. In Matthew 7, verse 7, we know it says, "Ask and it shall be given. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asks receives, and he that seeks finds, and to him that knocks it shall be opened." Matthew 7, verses 7 and 8. Point is that we are to ask. God will answer. God's answer might be an immediate miracle. It could be in the form of someone who comes and takes care of your problem, helps you through it. It might require you to say yes to an opportunity to grow. But in that opportunity and in that process, your answer will come. Your answer might be to wait, that it's not the right time. Your answer could be no, for a good reason that you might not understand right away. But in any case, we are to ask. God wants us to ask. And he's leaning down. He's bent over. He's got his ear facing us so that he can hear, because he wants to listen, and he will answer.